afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Awilco Drilling PLC third quarter 2015 conference call. My name is Rosie, and I'll be your coordinator for today's conference. For the duration of the presentation, you'll be on listen only. However, at the end of the call, you will have the opportunity to ask questions. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad and you'll be connected to an operator. I'll now hand you over to John Oliver Bryce to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thank you, Rosie, for that introduction. Once again, welcome to Awilco Drilling PLC's Q3 2015 earnings call. Today, in the earnings call, we will be giving you some highlights from the quarter. We'll be going through the financial results in some detail, followed by an operational update, followed by a quick look at the market outlook, a summary, and then a Q&A. For those of you who have access to the internet, we will be roughly running through the Awilco Drilling Q3 2015 presentation, which is now on the website, and that will be the backdrop for today's call. If you've got that in front of you, we'll be starting now with page five. That is the highlights. Let's talk about the highlights then from the quarter. The first one then is our company is announcing a dividend of $0.50 per share in respect to the quarter. How have we achieved this? Well, from our Q3 revenues of $90.4 million, driving EBITDA of $74 million. OpEx for the quarter, very good. OpEx for the quarter per rig was $78,700 per day. That is a blend of the two rigs, quite different. WilPhoenix around about $88,000 and WilHunter around about $70,000. Remember, the WilHunter has been stacked for most of the quarter. Blended OpEx then $78,700. Total contract backlog at the end of Q3 was $276 million. Revenue efficiency was 90.3%, and contract utilization during the quarter was 60.2%. The reduction mostly due to the early termination and the completion early of the Hess contract for WilHunter. Those were the highlights. Let's now look at the numbers in more detail. Again, if you have the presentation in front of you, we're now on section two on page seven, and we'll look at the income statement for the quarter. Our CFO, Ian Wilson, will walk us through the slides. Ian.
Okay. Thanks, John. Yes, for the quarter three, our contract revenue, $38.8 million. That principally represents the revenue from the WilPhoenix and the Apache contract, and then the final part of the contract that we had with Hess that came to conclusion on the 20th of July. The other revenue of just over $51 million represents the early release payment that we received from Hess in respect to the remaining fixed term of the contract. Total revenue of $90.4 million. Rig operating expenses, $14.5 million, equating to that average blended rate of $78,700 a day. The G&A expense, $1.8 million. That includes approximately $400,000 in respect of release of the long-term incentive plan provision of, as I said, $400,000. We'll guide on our future G&A expense later in the presentation. Depreciation, $4.5 million, very much in line with the previous quarters. Total expense there of $20.9 million, with resulting operating profit $69.5 million. Interest expense, once again, in line with the previous quarter, slightly reduced based upon a reduced balance in the bond. Total net financial items of $2.3 million. Profit before tax, $67.2 million, and tax expense, $9.5 million, equating to approximately 13.2% of an effective tax rate and resulting net profit of $57.7 million, equivalent to $1.92 per share. On a year-to-date basis, year-to-date earnings per share of $4.40. Onto the balance sheet. Rigs, machinery, and equipment, $255 million, with a few additions during the quarter, but $9.6 million of additions, offset by the depreciation charge. so a net increase over prior quarter of $5 million. And then our trade and other receivables is 18.4, and the accrued revenue 7.8. Both of those have since been received in forms of payments, and the accrued revenue both billed and received in terms of cash. No real movement in the inventory, and a good healthy cash balance of $151.5 million. The current tax figure that we have as a receivable is $69 million, and that should be read in conjunction with the current tax payable in the liability section below. But basically, in terms of movement of the numbers going forward, we will see the current tax receivable decrease in the first half of next year, to the tune of approximately $46 million, and then the remaining receivable will be received in the first half of 2017. And the relative corresponding amount of the current tax payable, we will be paying $54 million in 2016, and effective taxes due, and a further $25 million in 2017. But when we look at the differential between the current tax assets and the current tax liability, to see what our net liability actually is. Total assets there, $507 million. Retained earnings, you see, increasing quite substantially to 150.4. And long-term interest-bearing debt, no movement during the quarter, but since the quarter end, we have repaid the total installments of $5 million plus related interest. Total equity liabilities, $507 million.
Okay, Ian, thanks for that. Let's move now on to an operational update. So that's section three, if you have the presentation in front of you, and we're going to look at slide 10. So let's start with contract status on slide 10. Current contract backlog as of today is $257 million remaining of firm-term contract. What's changed since the last quarter? Well, a few things. Let's start with the Will Hunter. The Will Hunter, then, the rig is currently hot stacked. That means it's currently moored inshore waters at Invergordon, Scotland. The OPEX in its current form, which is hot stacked, is around about $70,000 per day. It's crewed and ready to take on new work. We are, however, monitoring the market closely with respect to the continued hot stack status. And then if you're looking at the slide, you'll see that the sort of orange bar, which shows the yard stay projected date, sort of Q2 there, 2016, what we can say about that is, even though it's shown there on the contract status, the actual timing of the SPS will depend on when sufficient follow-on work is secured to justify the capital outlay for that. So that's a Will Hunter. Will Phoenix then, there is a change in the Will Phoenix as well. If you look at the last quarterly presentation, you'll see that the SPS, or the yard stay, was originally scheduled for Q1 16, but there was an asterisk beside it which said subject to change, and in fact there has been a change. What we've done is we've brought this yard stay project forward. We're still in contract to Apache, but we've brought that, the yard stay, forward, and as of today, the rig is currently on tow towards the yard to start its SPS. So that's the contract status on page 10. Let's move on to page 11, operational performance. Just some pretty straightforward bullets here. Operational performance in Q2 was good. We did have a 92.5% operational performance. The Will Phoenix did experience a little bit of downtime with a BOP-related issue. It's still a good result, 92.5. OPEX during the quarter, I touched on that earlier. Where we are now, Will Phoenix was approximately 88 and Will Hunter was approximately 70 because of its hot stack status. A bit of a saving when it's not actually operating, but yet still fully crewed. And then finally, customer feedback remains positive. So, well, let's talk about the upcoming yard stay projects, which is slide 12, very capital intensive projects. I think we said previously, there are only three things that are important for success in the yard stay project, and that is planning, planning, and planning. And here we are now at the end of 3 years of planning, about to commence the yard stay project for the Will Phoenix. So as of today, the Will Phoenix is on its way to the yard. It's being towed now. It's moving from a location which was offshore about northeast of Aberdeen in the North Sea, and it's now moving down to a shipyard in the northeast of England, Hartlepool Able Yard. And the reason that we've decided to come in early, the timing of this yard, is to accommodate our customer's operational preference. Our customer has asked us to come in early, so we're working with them, and that's why we've come in early. So the Will Phoenix yard stay is still scheduled for 60 days, but, and here's the but, if well, we are coming in now, there is a potential for a slight extended yard stay, potentially up to 10 days, and that's because coming in now means we're exposed to the festive period in the UK, which is the Christmas and New Year traditional holiday period. So for planning purposes, we could see potentially a further 10 days go on to the original 60. But that, again, is because we are accommodating our customers' request to come in early, and we may have exposure to slightly non-productive time over the festive period. The total budget for the SBS still remains unchanged at $20 million per rig. But, again, I mentioned this 10 days, which may give us some small exposure to schedule and potentially cost. But at the moment, for planning purposes, we're still going for 20. The budget for the BOPs remains unchanged again at $22.5 million per rig for each BOP. And then finally, the Will Hunter, as I said before, the SPS, as shown on the contract status, is very much dependent on sufficient follow-on work being secured, nominally scheduled for mid-16, but we could push that further to the right, and we can leave the rig laid up without class, and so we can move it further to the right, even potentially into 17 if we wish. So that is some information on the upcoming yard stay projects. Okay, slide 13, if you have the presentation. Financial assumptions for 2016, looking forward. Here comes some guidance then, following on from our budget process. So, Ian, would you like to walk us through our financial assumptions for 2016?
Okay, yes, with regard to the operating expense on a per-day basis, we are looking at approximately $85,000 per day, which has pretty much been consistent with what we've experienced in 2015. And this assumes that both rigs are operating on the basis that one is operating for a shorter period of time, then there will be a lower OPEX per day, but this is based upon a full operating condition of $85,000 per day. The SG&A expected to be approximately $2.5 million per quarter, a slight decrease from our previous guidance there. We previously guided in the region of $3 million per quarter or $12 million per year. And then the total capital and SBS expenditure, expect that to be around $48 million for the year. And that's also an assumption that we will be doing the SBS for the Will Hunter around the middle of the year. So there's a couple of, if you like, optional scenarios there. So with regard to the BOP commitments, if we go ahead and we do both full projects, then the total spend will be $10 million, all of which will be spent in 2016. And only $5 million if the Will Hunter yard stay is deferred. And then for the routine capex, approximately $6 million per rig. And once again, $6 million will be deferred if the yard stay is deferred into 17. And the SPS, we anticipate a total cost there of $26 million. So the guidance of $40 million, we're looking at having spent $14 million in 2015 for the Will Phoenix, with a follow-on $6 million to complete the work early 2016. And then $20 million for the Will Hunter. Obviously, if the Will Hunter is deferred, then that cost will not come through until 2017.
Good. Thanks for that, Ian. Hopefully that's clear. So that was slide 13. Let's look at slide 14. Dividend distribution, pretty straightforward here. Awilco Drilling PLC announcing dividend payment of 50 cents per share in respect to the quarter. The dates here, payable on the 18th of December, ex-dividend on the 24th of November, and the company's dividend policy remains unchanged, and that is the company intends to distribute all free cash flow above a robust cash buffer to support operational working capital requirements and capital expenditure, including the SPS. And then the last point, which is on the slide, if you can see that, it's important to reiterate current levels of dividends will continue to be challenged by upcoming capital expenditure and future market prospects. So let's go on and have a look at the market, the semi-submersible drilling rig market in the UK. So that's slide 16 if you have it. Really, the takeaways from here are that there's been very few fixtures for semis in the second half of 2015. The last fixtures that were announced were all in the low 200s, but in saying that, most of those fixtures were assumed not to be clean rates and, in fact, probably rolled up other costs as well. So even though they were low 200s, the actual clean rate was potentially below that. If we then have a quick look at all the rigs that are available in the UK, we'll call that the UK fleet, that's on page 17. At the moment, there are 8 owners in the UK. There are 24 floating rigs. Out of that, 6 of them have gone to cold stack, and 4 of them are warm stack. Out of the 4 that are warm stacked, 3 of them are kind of mid-contract. They've come in for winter break, if you like, still being fully crewed. The only exception to that is our rig, the Will Hunter, which is hot stacked in preparation for potentially follow-on work. So that's the status of the rigs at the moment. Further rigs are anticipated to come off contract, so it very much is a picture of oversupply and limited immediate prospects. So we anticipate more rigs to go cold, and we also anticipate more rigs to be scrapped. So that is the story of the UK fleet made up of 8 owners and 24 floaters at this moment in time. So if I then pop on to the next page, which is 18, I'll have a quick look at the market generally. Well, what can we say? We can say uncertainty continues with respect to the timing and the shape of the market recovery. Operators continue with reductions in their E&P spend. There's an increased number of available rigs, as we've talked about already. There is a lack of new contract opportunities, and this is directly leading to some rig owners electing to cold stack, but also it has resulted in some rig owners electing to scrap some rigs, some of their older rigs, and it certainly is the rig owners with the largest fleets and the biggest exposure with the oldest units, if you can join all those dots together, that seem to be scrapping first. So there is a slight positive in this picture, and that is that continued rig attrition is key to rebalancing the future rig market. So that's commentary on the market as much as we can say. So let's summarise what we've said in the call today then. Firstly, Awilco Drilling announces a dividend payment of 50 cents per share in respect to the quarter. That was derived from a good operational performance, revenue efficiency during the quarter of 90.3%, and Awilco Drilling continues very much strict focus on cost discipline. As of today, we have a contract backlog of $257 million, and the company's focus is very much on securing new work for the Will Hunter. Market uncertainty continues. We talked about that with respect to the timing and the shape of the recovery. And finally, Wilco Drilling continues to evaluate market opportunities on a case-by-case basis. So that concludes the talking part of the presentation, and what I'll do now is I'll hand back to Rosie and you can manage the Q&A session.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and wish to withdraw your question, please press star 1 again. You will be advised when to ask your question. Okay, so the first question comes from the line of Mark Jasbeck, who is a private investor. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey, Mark.
Just a quick question. On the Guardian, the new contract, was that complete open tenure? Was that public, or No.
That was, well, as far as we understand, that was a direct negotiation between Dana and Diamond Offshore. And they've had a previous relationship, and that's probably as much as we could say. That that might be another one of these. There was something built into that rate, but it wasn't tendered. Yeah.
Okay. And then another question as far as decommissioning. Anything on that front?
So decommissioning has been talked about a lot in industry. Certainly, rigs availability and anticipated keener pricing would seem to make it very attractive to operators, but yet still some reluctance to actually sign up to contracts. There has been quite a lot of activity in the market in terms of RFIs, requests for information, or contact between operators and drilling contractors, and even some amount of contract activity for decommissioning. But what we're seeing, despite there was a sort of surge in interest in the last quarter, quite a lot of anticipated activity potentially in 16, it seems to be slipping from 16 into 17. It's not all gone, but it seems to be a lot of enthusiasm, but it's kind of moving to the right now.
Okay, that's all I have. Thanks so much.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks, Evo.
The next question comes from the line of David Bush, a private investor. Please go ahead.
Hello, David.
Yes, hi. Congratulations on the quarter and the dividend payout again.
Thank you.
I had a question. What are the prospects looking for in the next quarter, chance of being able to continue to pay out the same dividend, assuming, you know, at least a 90% rig utilization for the one contracted rig and assuming that the second rig does not get contracted?
I think we're going to. Our stock answer is I'm going to refer you back to our philosophy. You know, we trailed that everything over and above free cash over and above our robust cash buffer and our capital requirements, but also taking account of the future market. So, you know, we have to take that decision at the time. But there's an awful lot of moving parts to this. Yes. There's a very good cash balance in the Avoca Drilling, but as we did in this quarter, we very much have to think about protecting the company going forward. So it's the same philosophy. But we're not going to predict a dividend level today.
No, we can't do that. But what we can indicate is that there will be significantly reduced revenue in quarter four with the Wolf Phoenix that was operating up through the 18th of November and the Will Hunter. Expected to be idle for the course of the quarter. So earnings per share for the quarter will be probably have negative earnings for the quarter.
Right.
Okay, we currently have no questions coming through, so a quick reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad now. And the next question comes from the line of Martin Van Buren from HHM. Please go ahead.
Hello, Martin.
Hello, how are you? I was wondering what the remaining capex would be with Q4 included. On the presentation, you stated the remaining capex for 2016. Could you do this for with Q4 of 2015 included as well?
Yeah, the spend that we anticipate for Q4, and it is quite difficult to pinpoint directly. It's probably better to look at the combination of Q4 and Q1. We've got a specific a rollover point, obviously, 1st of December, and timing of work and timing of invoicing and so forth relating to that will be slightly dependent on specific timing. But just to clarify again, when we're looking at our VOP expenditure, our total expenditure there is $45 million. We spent about $10 million in 2014. We spent approximately $10 million on a year-to-date basis in 2015. And on the basis that we get the timing right, then it could be up to $15 million respect to the BOP expenditure, which principally covers the full cost of the Gulf Phoenix BOP. There is a risk, I wouldn't say it's a risk, but there's a possibility that some of that expenditure may roll over into 16. But as far as remaining expenditure for the BOP, then really looking at 15 million there. And then a further 10 million remains through the course of 16 for the Bullhunter balance primarily. On other capital expenditures, we spent just over 8 million on a year-to-date basis, so you know, maybe 2 million through the rest of this year. And then for the SPS specifically, we anticipate approximately 14 million of physical spend in 15, with 6 million coming through in 16 for the SPS. And as mentioned previously, depending on the timing of the Bullhunter SPS, you know, a further 20 million there that will be in 16 or 17.
Okay, thank you very much. Could you also elaborate on the change of ownership of the Whale Hunter? What's the rationale over there?
Okay, historically we've had both rigs owned by two different Maltese companies, and there has been significant change in the legislation in the UK, specifically with regard to bareboat charter legislation, and more recently there's also legislation relating to diverted profits tax. And we were in a position last year to move the Bull Phoenix back to the UK, and we've left the Bull Hunter pending future market opportunities, but it now proves to be less beneficial to retain the rig in the Maltese ownership. So we transferred the rig in August, and now both rigs are owned and operated by the respective UK operating entities. So we've got the parent company, Awilco Drilling PLC. We've got Awilco, the Will Hunter UK Limited, which owns and operates the Will Hunter. And we've got Will Phoenix UK Limited, which owns and operates the Will Phoenix. The Maltese companies, basically just shell companies now, we will retain these as open companies until such time as final taxes are remitted, which will occur during the course of 16 for the Will Phoenix company and 2017 for the Will Hunter company. But it is to be more financially efficient in terms of feeling the best place to operate and own and operate the rigs.
Yeah, in simple language, there's some considerable business efficiencies of operating rigs from Maltese companies, but that is no longer the case due to changes in recent legislation for tax in the UK.
Okay, thank you very much. Also, could you elaborate on the discovery of Apache in the Barrow area? What does this mean for you? Do you think this is very good for the long term opportunity for the Whale Phoenix? Could you say something about how many semi-subs they will need over there?
So I can't really speak on behalf of Apache, but what we can tell you is we've been drilling two wells for them, which are very important to them. One's called K Prospect and one's called Corona. And this is Apache drilling in the Beryl field. They have not announced any results with Corona, but K Prospect is widely accepted that it's been successful. And undoubtedly it will drive further activity in the future. Now, what that turns out to be, how many more wells, how many more rigs remains to be seen, but it's certainly been a good result for Apache in terms of the K prospect, yeah.
So indirectly for you as well, hopefully?
Well, we've got a fixed contract for a fixed time, and we're building on a very good relationship, good performance, we're trying to help Apache wherever we can. So hopefully these things will all help when they're looking at the end of the contract. They want to extend the Will Phoenix or potentially even look at the Will Hunter. So it's only positive, but how that manifests itself at the end of the contract remains to be seen. So certainly Apache are smiling about the K prospect. Anyway.
Okay, sure. Thank you. Last question from my side. The yard stay of the Will Phoenix was pushed earlier on. Is there a risk that the blow-up preventer is not ready on time?
No.
Thank you. That was it from my side.
The next question comes from the line of Gaisia Margitel from Taylor Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
I just had a quick question. How much cash do you intend to leave in the company at the end of the firm contract of Will Phoenix?
We haven't come up with a specific number. We do intend, obviously, to maintain our cash buffer, which is a flexible amount relative to upcoming anticipated expenditures, whether it be capital, FPS, as we've stated, and very much dependent on the market outlook. So we can't give a specific number on that. If it's a strong market, then you'd expect a lower cash balance. If it's a weak market, then we'd expect a higher cash balance.
Okay, but given the current situation, there are a few prospects, as you mentioned, right now. So assuming that the market is still weak, let's say at the end of the contract, so in 2 years' time, what would you expect in terms of cash? How long could you afford to warm stack Will Phoenix, assuming that by end of 2017 you will probably scrap Will Hunter if there is no prospect for work?
I think there's too many variables to give a specific prediction of what we will do at that point in time. But scrapping Will Hunter is certainly not something that's being discussed at the moment. The market will recover at some point. I think we are in a pretty good position compared to some of our peers here in terms of our debt level and certainly our cash position and certainly our contracts. So I can't give you an answer about the cash position. What I can tell you is hot stacking, warm stacking, there are many different levels of costs that you can apply to preserving a rig. We've seen that hot stacking, we can bring 88,000 down to 70,000 just by some clever efficiencies there. So that's probably the top end of stacking cost. And then we can look at things like warm stacking, lukewarm stacking, and lukewarm stacking is possible to bring costs OPEX down considerably, even sort of high 20s, 30,000 sort of. And then there's another level below that, which is cold stacking, which is just to sort of pick a number, say maybe $10,000. But there's one thing to do to remember with the $10,000 per day OPEX for cold stacking is that with cold stacking there is a sort of there's a big cash requirement at the start and the end of the cold stacking. That's the preservation costs and then the reactivation costs. And if you want to hazard a guess at a number, it's sort of in the range of $4 to $5 million if you add those two bits together. So lots and lots and lots of different OPEX costs for lots of different ways of preserving rigs. So we have to look at the market at the time and decide what's most appropriate in terms of preserving the Will Hunter or the Will Phoenix, and then that will determine what our costs are going forward. So that gives you a bit of colour of some of the things that will factor into our decision making at the time.
Okay, thank you. But as you dividend policy is almost unchanged for the time being, the nearer we come to the decision to you will have a more clarity about the prospects, there won't be any contract and no cash flow, so if you don't have if you don't plan right now, once you come to the decision making, in fact, there will be no cash inflows.
No, and that's a good question, and clearly that's something that's considered by the company and the board. And if you look at slide 14 of the presentation from today, you'll see two paragraphs, the last two paragraphs on the page. The first one says, the company's dividend policy remains unchanged. I'll just read it to you one more time. It says, the company intends to distribute all free cash above a robust cash buffer to support operational working capital requirements and capital expenditure, including SPS. Fine. The next paragraph says, current levels of dividends will continue to be challenged by upcoming capital expenditure and future market prospects. So clearly the company does factor in what prospects cash coming in mean to the company, and then whether it or not it's prudent to pay dividends at the time. So to answer your question, we are doing, I think, exactly what you're intimating there, and that's written in black and white on page 14.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. You're welcome.
The next question comes from the line of Ketil Halkas from Sberbank. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hello. My question has been answered. Thank you.
Okay. No problem.
Okay, we have a follow-up question from Mark Dasbeck. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Just a quick question. As far as acquiring a new rig, what are the bid-ask spreads you're seeing in the marketplace right now?
Acquiring a new rig. Talking about acquiring a brand-new semi-submersible in the yard? Is that what you're...
Or something that's like cold stacked right now, if someone wants to sell a rig.
Well, we're not actively looking at adding a rig on. I think what we said previously, Wilco Drilling is an entrepreneurial company. We started in the back of a unique acquisition opportunity before, when rigs were cheap in the last sort of down cycle. So, you know, we do evaluate opportunities that pop up with rig acquisitions. If you think about what our financial discipline was or is, from that point we started the company to today, it was very much about buying rigs which add value or projects which add value, taking on projects that we understand the risk, and essentially trying to take on a project which is tied to a customer contract. So we followed that discipline, which meant in the last 5 years, or almost 6 years, that we looked at other opportunities, but we didn't do them because they didn't tick all those boxes. Here we are now in end of 2015, start of 2016. There are lots of opportunities for, you know, discount price rigs. So we understand the risks, and we can see potentially how it adds value. But you know, the big challenge here is, can you tie this to a customer contract? It's all very well buying a discounted third gen or, you know, a new rig out of a yard, but if you've just got to pay to have it stacked for the next 3 years, it's not such a good project. So we've kind of tentatively looked at stuff, but at the moment it's really about, you know, could we get something at a good price which we tie to a contract, and that's kind of preventing us leading in too much detail.
Oh, it sounds good. Thanks.
We have another follow-up question from the line of David Bush. Please go ahead.
Hi, I'm kind of a long-term investor of Wilco. I started investing when the stock price here in the U.S. under symbol AWLCF was in 26 range, and I've been investing ever since.
Okay.
As it went down. But, you know, my net worth has dropped about half what it was, and I understand, you know, we got the maintenance issues coming up and the market environment. There's, you know, that's mostly what's impacting the stock price. But I would just like to see, you know, what kind of austerity measures the company could put in place, such as suspension of any bonuses for management until perhaps at least the second rig gets rented at a profitable rate, maybe cut back on employees in regards to minimum warm stacking, cutting the cost back there so the losses would be a lot less. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, good points, and we've addressed that and more, but what we did is we actually went a little bit earlier than the market, so I don't think we've got as much credit as we should have done for our cost efficiencies, and let me give you an illustration of what we did. You see a lot of drillers in the last month or last couple of months talking about they've made big cost savings. Well, if you think about what Wilco Drilling did very early on in 2015, we originally guided for OPEX for each rig at $100,000 per day per rig. But very, very quickly, we looked at trying to reduce that through various efficiencies, and we brought that down to $95,000 a day. And then as the market prospects cooled further as we went through the year, we looked at that again, and we brought the OPEX down again to about $85,000 a day, and that was from a combination of all kinds of things, including looking at some employee costs and sorts of fringe benefits, etc. So we've kind of been ahead of the crowd in that respect. In terms of what else are we doing? Well, we put the rig, the Will Hunter, into inshore waters. We've kept it hot stacked, but we've still brought the OPEX down from, well, current OPEX is about, I was going to guide an 85, but it was 88 for the last quarter. We've brought that down to 70, so that's another saving for the Wheel Hunter. Now, can we bring it down even less than that? Yes, we can. We can bring it down quite considerably if we went to, let's say, went from hot to warm stack or warm to lukewarm stack. The big challenge is that once we come down to warm or lukewarm, we're essentially losing people, letting people, making them redundant and sort of stopping activity. And the rig is then not as marketable. It's not as attractive to customers. It's not ready to go. We lose competency, et cetera. So it's a real trade-off about how much money we want to save, but at the same time make our rig the most attractive potentially to go back and take up what work there is in 16. So that was the point I was trying to make in the presentation, that we are hot stacked in Invergordon, but we monitor that situation very closely on a day-by-day basis. Now, we've also just completed our budget process, our 2016 budget process. That was just stamped yesterday, in fact, and that was some of the guidance that Ian went through. And we've taken a little bit off SG&A. We've looked very carefully at CapEx going forward, and we've done a number of other changes to try and reduce cost wherever possible. So to answer your question, yes, we're doing it. It's just I don't think we've got as much press as our competitors because we did it first. And then I think Ian's just writing something down here I mentioned.
Yes.
We're also employees, the employees' salaries and packages, if you like, as well as sort of taking some of the fringe away. We had a retention bonus which we put in place when the market started to rise, and we were one of the first companies to do that, recognizing that when the market, like the drillers spike, competency becomes a very marketable commodity and people will be tempted for high rates. We put a retention bonus in place which served the company well and retained our people. That means we could deliver the services to our customers if we wanted to. But now the market's coming off. We have removed that retention bonus. So there's another example of some cost savings. So, yes, we're doing it in lots of different ways. So hopefully that answers your question.
Okay, thank you very much. One last question. Is there, I know there's a cost involved with the cold stacking. Is there a cost involved to the company to warm stack or not really? Not an initial cost.
Oh, okay, so just see if I can spell it really simple. So at the moment we're hot stacked, that means pretty much everybody's on the rig. So instead of 85,000 OPEX offshore, we're about 70,000, and that's with the rig pretty much sitting next to land with the full crew on it. That's what we call hot stack. A cold stack is everybody off and we're just paying for insurance. That's about $10,000 a day. So basically, warm or lukewarm stack are different variations between everybody on and nobody on. And basically, it's up to us to pick a level. But you could say a lukewarm stack with, you know, minimum sort of 8-10 people on it, blah blah blah, would be just under $30,000 a day. But again, the cooler you go, the more compromised you are, and a little bit more challenging is to market the rig as ready to go.
Okay, thank you very much.
The next question comes from the line of William Mansfield from Berkeley Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Hello, William.
Yeah, hi, you guys. Thank you, gentlemen, for doing the call. I had two questions. One is somewhat related to this topic of warm stacking. With the Wheel Hunter, on your slide, you show the potential of an SDS yard stay in the second quarter of 2016. In theory, you could adjust that. You could keep pushing that out further and further, right? It doesn't actually have. There's no drop-dead deadline for that. And the variable that would allow you to keep pushing it out would be that you continue to be warm stacking it, and eventually you get a contract to make it happen. Is that the time frame?
You're almost right. There's a small detail that's worth remembering, though. It's so you're. SPS stands for Special Periodic Survey, essentially what we're doing is we're working with DNV to get our big stamp to say, yes, you're good to go. Now, you need to get this stamp following a whole bunch of inspection. That's why you go to the yard. To get this stamp, you need to do every 5 years. Now, our 5 years is up in the middle of 2016, so if you want the Wheel Hunter to be continuously in class, capable to go out at any point, we need to do this before it runs out. But what happens if it runs out? Well, we can actually, what we do is called lay it up without class. So we can keep it in the same location, which is inshore waters in Invergordon in Scotland, but it just means it's out of class. So if we want to reactivate it, we've got to do that survey. And the further to the right it goes, potentially there's more risk with, you know, things that haven't been inspected for a longer time. But essentially, you're right, it just means it's more cost in terms of OPEX, whichever version of stack we go for, hot, warm, lukewarm, really cold or cold, and anything else you can think of for a new phrase.
And it's, unfortunately, it's one of these things that getting a contract for the Whale Hunter is a very binary thing. Either eventually you either have a contract or you don't. And so at some point, if you don't have a contract, you're no longer going to be warm stacking it. You're going to be start moving the cost down. Is that a fair?
When you get to a cold stack status, really, a cold stack status is really taking a view that it's not going to be working for a considerable period of time because remember, it actually costs you quite a lot of cash to prepare the rig for cold stack and then reactivate it. And let's just say that equates to roughly 18 months of lukewarm status, approximately. So you're really assuming it's going to be a bit more than 18 months if you go for cold stack. And then the problem is that's the numbers. The reality in the market is, as a cold stack rig, you're pretty much always going to be sort of second choice or last choice of the cold stack. So you could, in theory, push your idle period further to the right by going cold stack. You just don't want to be cold stack. And also, the longer a rig's in cold stack, there's a bit more pressure about, well, it's been cold stack for, 5 years, attrition around the corner kind of thing. So cold stack's not on the radar for us.
And then there's a lot of questions, obviously, today about dividend and dividend policy and things like that. And you're pretty clear about the dividend policy. It's sort of elaborating on your financial strategy in general. Right now, you have a cash balance that's in excess of your total debt. Is it important to you as a financial strategy to maintain a cash balance greater than your total debt?
No, that has come around from in a unique circumstance from the Whale Hunter. The Whale Hunter is a tremendously good rig in terms of operational performance. And what happened is we had a fixed-term contract with a customer, which was Hess, and we basically performed so well that we finished approximately 6 months before the end of the firm term. So then Hess honored the contract and gave us this one-off payment for the remainder of it, which meant we had a large injection of cash, which would have normally been generated month by month. So that's why the cash balance is so high. We do have fairly significant capital expenditure coming up. We do like to maintain a cash buffer, but also we need to build a war chest, because we have an uncertain market coming ahead. So there was no plan to say we want cash more than debt. It's just a consequence of Hess and also being prudent moving forward.
Okay. Great. Thank you for answering my question.
Okay. I think we've got time for maybe one more.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. So the next question comes from the line of Akiva Rosenfeld, private investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'm just wondering, I see you're the only rig that's warm stack now. Is that true?
No, there are four.
That doesn't have a contract coming up.
That's correct.
So basically, in term of readiness, you're the most ready of all the companies. That's what I figure out, right?
Correct.
And so what do you think would be your competition's strong point in price? Or because in readiness you look the most, is there a certain limit that you think your competition could go lower than you? Or is there certain specifics of the rigs that you think that the competitors could get?
Well, all of the above is the answer. So price obviously is very important in this market. So first of all, we have to get past that hurdle. But let's just say that a hot rig and a cold rig are the same price, and clearly that's where a hot rig will have a big advantage, and that is why we are continuing to keep it hot but at the same time monitor it. Over and above that, then, there are very often sort of specific requirements which make one out of the, there's 24 rigs in Invergordon, in the UK. There are sometimes there are specifics that make some rigs much more attractive than others, and some examples would be water depth or ability to work in a certain part of the North Sea, maybe the very northern part during winter. So the bigger rigs are probably more suited than the smaller rigs at that kind of time. So there are operational technical requirements which sometimes mean that one rig is more suitable than the others. There's price, clearly, but the hot stack thing counts for a lot, certainly in the case when we're, let's just say, comparing apples for apples.
Mm-hmm. And technically, are you looking for short-term prospects too, just to keep down the, you know, the warm stacking course that you could basically just for those few months, even if you're not making much money on the rig?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we clearly we're trying to get the best possible contract coverage we can for a Wilco Drilling and the Wilco Hunter. It would be fair to say that pre-SPS, we can take a view on the short-term contracts. But the point to make is that a longer, you know, a contract which starts after the summer in 16, which would trigger the capital investment for the SPS, ideally we would be looking for something of a bit of substance that could make a sort of meaningful generation contribution to the cost of the SPS. You know, an example would be it wouldn't be that attractive to do an SPS for the Will Hunter and spend $20 million on the SPS and 22.5 for the balance of 22.5 on the BOP and all the other costs, etc., just to go out and do one short well. So that, you know, that's it's pre-SPS as we can take a view on some more creative. We take a view on contracts, and post-SPS, ideally it should be something that can make a contribution to the SPS itself and the CapEx associated with it.
So technically, if you wait till whatever you have to do the SPS or the BOPs and there's no contract coming up till that time, and you basically would have to cold stack the rig because the cost is just too much to even to do the BOPs to keep it.
Yeah, it depends on our view on the market, but clearly, unless there was sort of sight of work, it wouldn't make sense to do the BOP, the SPS in mid-16. We would just defer that until you know, either a contract was secured or we had more confidence in securing a contract. But we wouldn't necessarily get the cold, you know, even for sort of a year and a half. It's, you know, hopefully it's not going to be anything like that, but if we did, it would more likely to go down to a sort of lukewarm stack, because again, cold puts you out of the game in terms of marketing in many respects, but also the other thing to remember is a cold rig returning to the market after, let's say, 2 years or something like that, just the reality of storing equipment, you tend to find you have operational challenges and, you know, equipment problems with such a long period. So a cold stack is just something really most people would like to avoid if you can.
Okay, and just one question on decommissioning work. Is there any time limit that there's the penalty for the companies if they don't do decommissioning works? Because technically they could postpone it forever. What is there, the government any puts any time limits on it? Or?
No, not at the moment. I mean, I understand that to keep their, you know, there is an obligation. Well, there is an obligation to do it at some point, but most, I think, all of the operators don't have a drop dead date. But I think what you can say is that there has been a sort of increase in interest because operators realize they have to do it at some point. One rig pricing is clearly going to be more attractive than it has been. But the second thing is there's now a benchmark for what decommissioning takes or what it costs. And that's because the Will Hunter has done, you know, the first sustained long-term campaign. So you can really see what decommissioning takes over a campaign. So you can work out average cost for wells. You know, every well is different, but it's given a bit of confidence to the market in terms of, okay, there's a good benchmark here for decommissioning and rigs are more competitive prices. So that's fueled a big interest in it recently. But the downside is that, you know, they've all got budget constraints. It seems to have slipped a wee bit to the right. The government is also interested because they're on the hook for about 50% of the cost of decommissioning as well. So even though, to answer your question in a very long way, even though the government isn't forcing them to do decommissioning at the moment, I think even they realize now this is optimum time to do it, but we'll wait and see what happens.
Mm-hmm, I hear. And And I understand that the Whale Hunter finished the work early because you were able to compact the time in a shorter period?
Well, basically, we had a specific number of wells to do in a specific time period. And there was actually options as well at the end of the Hess contract. But, you know, the Hess team and the Awilco drilling team and the rig worked so well together that we beat all of the estimated targets for decommissioning these wells. We kind of did ourselves out of a job. It was a fixed-term contract, so Hess honoured the contract and paid the balance of the contract to Awilco Drilling, even though the rig was finished early. So success all round in terms of performance.
I just want to expand on that. Basically, the question is if you could, let's say, show another operator that you were able to do the let's say, 6 months shorter than it's probable, maybe if you give them that option, if you finish it quicker, that you won't charge them for that amount, it might have more interest in because they're going to save, a few million dollars on that.
I think there's two upsides to using. I'll put my salesman hat on here. There's two reasons for using the Whale Hunter for decommissioning for a sustained campaign, and that's the knowledge that the team has built up, and the sort of modifications to the rig. It's really become a sort of decommissioning machine, if you like. So there's a lot of knowledge there, which is worth a lot. But I think probably the bigger one is that it shows that the bigger the campaign, the more wells you put together, it just drives efficiency. You know, the rig and the contractors that are required of the rig, there's just a natural efficiency from doing 20 in a row rather than doing one or two or three, etc. So I think Awilco Drilling and Whale Hunter's unique decommissioning experience and the fact that a sustained campaign just drives efficiencies, if managed correctly, makes Awilco Drilling and Whale Hunter hopefully a very attractive partner for a sustained decommissioning campaign. But you're right, there's a big saving, there's a big prize there, and we've demonstrated it with Hess.
All right, thank you. That answered my question.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we have no more questions, so John, I'll hand back to you.
Okay, Rosie. Well, thank you very much for hosting the call, and thank you all to the people who dialed in and asked the questions to Awilco Drilling's Q3 earnings call. Thank you and goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining today's conference. You may now replace your handsets. Thank you.